pour something flammable into your glass. It's Jaded Gamercast. My name is Lang. Nathan is away in the wonderful land of Chicago playing an Adepticon. I don't know how he's doing, so don't ask. But with me today is Mr. Matt Lau. You may recognize him from the, Circle of, let's just say the Council of Elrond for tournaments that we had not too long ago, where we had a lot of tournament organizers out talking about their stuff. He is one of the purveyors of the Team OP tournament coming up in June, which we will talk about a little bit later in the show. Welcome, Matt.
Hey, how's it going?
I'm drinking scotch. I started drinking about 2 hours ago. I was watching a German existential daughter drown in a pool movie called The Door with my wife that she was recommending highly. It wasn't bad. It wasn't terrible, but it was just like her trying to convince me to do it was just a very long, like 2 week process of like, let's watch this German film. And I'm just like, can I just watch Transformers again? Like, I really don't want to, like, let's put Big Trouble in Little China in. And she's like, what the fuck are you talking about? So we watched it. It was okay, though. It was okay. But I'm on to my second glass of scotch. What are you drinking, Matt?
Just a straight-up rum and coke, as usual.
That's a money winner right there.
Oh, it is.
All right.
You know, I didn't used to drink, actually. I just started drinking these to try and get into the habit of drinking, because all my friends will tell you I was...
Start a podcast.
That'll probably do it. Maybe I should just come on here more often.
That is one of the keenest training methods in the world, as far as I'm concerned, because I did not have nearly the alcohol tolerance that I have now, to say the least. All right, so welcome to part two of the Empire Army Book review. As we've said, oh, you know what? Hold on a second. You just start talking, Matt. I'm going to go turn my furnace off.
Talking about what? Talking about the Empire? I don't know. I guess I'm alone here. I'm so lonely. So lonely.
Welcome to live J-List Celebrity Podcasting, everybody. My name is Lang. Normally, I remember to turn my furnace off because we live in Canada and it's fucking cold. And I'm in a basement. But yes, welcome to the part two of the Empire Army Book Review. As we said in the last episode, we're going to be talking primarily about list building, tactics, and tournament play. And kind of how the metagame is affected with this book, which is actually pretty huge, to say the least. I think considering all of the rage and the conversations that have been going back and forth regarding this book, you can say that it has changed things a lot. I don't think it's changed things a ton for Empire players, but I think it's definitely changed... I don't think it's changed things a lot for people who don't play Empire, because I think they're going to look at this book for the most part the same way, with the exception of maybe a few... things like target priority, which we'll kind of get into as well.
Yeah.
But for the most part, I feel like, you know, people who don't play Empire aren't really looking at this book going like, oh, I have to fucking change everything now. I think Empire players are the ones that really have to change gears and kind of understand that the way that you played this list before is not necessarily going to work the way that as effectively as it did in the past.
I would have to agree there. I think that actually a lot of the rage that's coming out of Empire players right now is just because they're not used to this change, and it's quite a dramatic change to the way you kind of have to play the army.
Well, I wouldn't say that it's really a dramatic change. I understand where you would say that, but I would say, you know, like it's just kind of a shift in perception. Like the way that you view certain units has to change, and the way that you treat your kind of auxiliary stuff on the board as opposed to your core and your heroes has to change. But outside of that, like, your deployment's not going to change dramatically, your artillery's not going to change dramatically, the way that you're using your magic, the way that you're using your heroes is not going to change dramatically. I think what it really comes down to is kind of all the rest of that supplementary shit in the book is going to change quite a bit. And I think that that's where people are starting to feel like, you know, oh, I don't have enough. Like, I can't do anything with it. It's just, you know, halberds are a point more expensive. Which still to this day, since the book came out, I don't understand how people are upset about this. Like, that's balancing. That's all that is.
I agree. The one thing that kind of gets me is that swordsman went to 7 points and went down in stats. That kind of bugs me a little bit, but that's because I really like swordsman.
Well, everybody really likes swordsman for good reason. It was why everybody really liked halberdiers was good for good reason. Oh, by the way, Matt is not a podcaster, so his mic may not be the highest quality. If it fades in and out, we apologize, but just fucking deal with it for a show.
Son of a bitch. Is it doing that again?
No. It was doing it earlier. I just wanted to throw that out there. I find usually if you apologize ahead of time, then those guys, you know those guys.
Oh, yes.
Will bitch at you later for the fact that you were drunk on a Sunday night before work and you forgot to merge the audio tracks.
Okay, I'm just going to say this right now. I apologize for being one of those guys last week who's like correcting you and all those things. I didn't want to be, but it was really bugging.
You know what the funny thing about it is I honestly don't blame anybody because we're nerds and that's part of our DNA. Like if somebody says something wrong about Star Wars, like what was it the other day? Like somebody quoted Star Wars incorrectly. I'll go back to a story that I had. Ward. A friend of mine who runs the Onslaught tournaments, him and I were out having beers one night and he quoted Lando from Star Wars and he said like, this deal just keeps getting worse and worse. And I was just like, no, God damn it. It's this deal keeps getting worse all the time. Get it right. And then it spawned to this whole thing where I kept saying that all he ever did was misquote Star Wars and how the one time he said Admiral Ackbar was like, it's a trick. Anyways, I digress. Nerds can't help it. It's in their DNA. So I don't hold it against anybody, but I had to jump in at that point and just, you know, the funny thing was, is I actually wanted to start this episode by like, okay, page 31 of the Imperial Armory. In this section, you will find the description and rules for a number of weapons and upgrades that are available for several units and characters within the Empire Army. Period. Return key. Mechanical steed. Bold. Named by its creator. You know, like I wanted to start with just like literally reading the book word for word. But again, it probably wouldn't have been that funny.
Pivoting podcast, I'm sure.
Yeah, well, you know me. But you know, I mean, it's I don't hold it against you, but definitely like I'll say it right here at the top of the show. If we get something wrong, whatever. Go ahead and correct us if it makes you feel better, but like it happens. I mean, I've been playing Warhammer 8th edition for what, 2 years now, roughly 2 years now. I still get rules wrong out of the book.
Lang, it's kind of a thing between my friends and I. Everyone knows I don't read rule books, books in general. And so actually it's a miracle I can play this game at all, but the Empire book is probably one of the few books I've actually read. So I think I'm good.
Maybe that's why it was bothering you so much. You're just like, I fucking read that.
I know this for once.
See, before that, you would have just taken what we said as gospel.
Oh, for the first year of the new the old vampire book being out, I had no idea white kings were toughness 5. I thought they were still toughness 4 with two. I was playing them like that. It was awful.
Oh man, that's great. Yeah, for anybody who's using this podcast as a codex or army book, please don't. That's a terribly bad idea. Okay, so let's get into the meat of this podcast a little bit. Matt, you play Empire?
Yes, I do.
You do play Empire. How long have you been playing Empire?
I've been playing Empire since probably about a year after my Wood Elves. So
last book. So you didn't. You,
yeah, seventh.
You started in 7th edition. You started in the last book, so you don't own Spearmen.
No, I don't own Spearmen, no.
Okay, so, and that's totally fine, because again, one of Nathan's big gripes was, you know, he was saying, it's Crudace, Crudace, of course, nobody owns Spearmen, so he's going to make halberdiers more expensive so that people want to buy Spearmen. And I shook my head going like, well, no, like, only people who started Empire in 7th don't have Spearmen. Everyone else has Spearmen. Like, Spearmen...
It's true.
Empire Spearmen from like the 6th edition box set were like the most abundant thing in hobby. Like, you know how the Skaven are so abundant right now from the starter kit? Where like if you say I'm starting a Skaven army, there's like a billion people handing you Skaven models. That's how Empire used to be. So
yeah,
Empire Spearmen with Lion Shields, those were, I mean, people were just absolutely swimming in those things, you know, just lousy with Empire Spearmen. So for the majority of people who've been playing Empire for a really long time, they've got Spearmen on the shelves that they didn't use throughout all of 7th edition that maybe they'll take out now, but probably not. Which we'll talk about as we build the list.
Maybe. It depends. It depends how much they do hate their halberds being another point. Oh, no.
But even still, I mean, even still at that point, you're still getting more out of your halberds. But we'll talk about that a little bit more as we get to list building. Okay, so I'm going to kick this off here, and I'm actually going to let you guys give you guys a quick overview of a 2,500 point list that I've built for my empire to be, essentially. And we'll kind of break this down, talk about it a little bit, and then, Matt, what I'd like you to do is you're just going to kind of compare it to the list that you've built, okay?
Okay.
All right, so I've started off by using Balthazar Gelt. I feel like he is the best choice for a caster in the army. Every time I look at building a list without him in it, I always look at Lore of Metal, and I always look at a level 4 with like a couple of items here and there, and it always adds up to something that's just a few points cheaper than Balthazar Gelt, but not as good. So Balthazar Gelt is my choice for my wizard, my caster, but he is not my lord. I also take an Elector count, Rune Fang, full plate, enchanted shield on foot with a unit, Hero with a BSB, Armor of Meteoric Iron, Luther Huss, two warrior priests, basically naked warrior priests. Yeah, sexy. And then we get into the core of my army, 50 halberds with two detachments, one detachment of 25 swordsmen, one detachment of 25 handgunners, and then I've got a steam tank, a hurricanium, four demigryphs, and two cannons. And I believe I've got roughly 100 points of extra leftover after that's done.
Whoa. How many cannons?
Two cannons.
Okay.
Four demigryphons, two cannons.
Okay, that was four cannons. What? A, illegal. Two.
I may have said it wrong. I've
bullshit.
Been thinking. See, that's how you win at tournaments. You cheat. You just cheat the shit out of it.
I actually accidentally cheated at the Tournament of Champions. We'll go over that later, maybe.
That's rad. Okay, so that's the list that I built for 2,500 points. It's actually very similar to the list that I had built for the last book. I still have a very large number of warrior priests. I've still got Balthazar Gelt. I've still got an Elector count. I've still got a BSB. I've still got a horde of halberds, supporting unit of swordsmen. The big difference here is the Hurricanium and the Demigryphons, because I feel like those two are the best additions to the book that we've seen in the new book. I feel like they really supplement the army very, very well. The plus one to hit is an enormous boost. The additional power dice, I believe you get a power dice for the Hurricanium, is great, and it's a chariot. Like, I think for 130 points, that's a steal of a deal. Four Demigryphons, again, just for flanking. I feel like it's hard to compare them to knights if you're looking at a small unit of knights. I feel like with in a tournament situation, you're better off taking four Demigryphons as opposed to taking a unit of 10 Reichsguard Knights. And I think the points are similar at that point. I think maybe the Reichsguard Knights 10 is a little bit more, maybe 50, 60 points more.
I think the big difference is that with Reichsguard, like, okay, I'm going to be honest here. When I look at Reichsguard Knights, Cave, yeah, they're really good for their points. Let's not kid ourselves. But I don't see stubborn being a very useful rule on knights, because really the point is you're supposed to hit and punch and then go through. I mean, demigryphons, frankly, they don't need the stubborn because they just murder things, and like they're godless killing machines, and so you'll never lose combat in the first place. So you don't need the stubborn. I just think they're the better choice, hand over fist. Like, why wouldn't you take these things?
Well, okay, but let's draw back again here, right? You do get a lot of strength 6 attacks as opposed to strength 5, which is nice. The demigryphons that I built have the halberds, again, just kind of for the more prolonged combats. I don't know if I agree with what you're saying about blowing through, because I think the idea of blowing through units is kind of done now in this phase of the game. I think only about 50% of armies out there are even going to allow for something like that to happen. And the majority of them, you're going to have to do like combo charges to really do enough wounds and really blow that unit down far enough that they're losing steadfast, and you've killed enough of them that they're losing combat by so much that they essentially need insane courage to stay on the board. And you're never doing that with just knights, right? So I feel like the reason why Reichsguard Knights kind of stand out for me in terms of the majority of knights in the game is just the fact that they're inherently stubborn, right? They can't lose it because the character dies, or you're not buying extra points in a character, so they're a really small unit and it doesn't matter anyways. It's kind of the idea that you can throw them at a big unit that's relatively low strength and hold that unit up and essentially keep doing damage as well. You know, I think that's what I like about them, and the fact that they've got the mobility afterwards really, really adds to it a lot. I don't think that you should ever put a character in that unit.
I think that for the extra 4 points you get for paying for two Reichsguard Knights, the Demi Griffin will just overall cause more damage, though. I played a game, I tested them out. I mean, I didn't have the actual models. I kind of used, you know, like proxy cardboard things.
Sure.
But I threw them into a block of 40 Dwarf Warriors, and they just killed them. It, like, almost to a man. They broke them down to, like, 15 guys after about three rounds of combat and
But again, that's kind of the optimum situation, right? Where they've got a high armor save, but not too high. They've got low strength. They've got, you know, relatively okay toughness. So you can grind them down without too much of a problem, right? But if you're going in against, like, Chaos Warriors with Halberds, or you're going in against something that's going to do a little bit more damage to you in the long run, you're going to want to have the Stubborn. And I think that that's where the Demigryphs kind of fall off. Is the places where they are taking as many wounds as they're dealing. Whereas Reichsguard Knights taking as many wounds as they're dealing isn't necessarily as bad a situation.
I definitely think that the difference is probably in placement and the movement of the unit for sure, but I do kind of agree. If you're looking for that unit to stick, Reichsguard can do it. I just like greatswords because... A, I don't like painting horses, and B, I already bought a whole bunch of Trinity cards, so I'm not...
I think it's been well established that I fucking hate painting horses. Oh, God, there is nothing I loathe more in life than painting horses. I mean, it's just... Obviously, I feel like the Demigryphons are better than the Reichsguard Knights, which is why I took them as opposed to taking Knights. But to be perfectly honest, like I said... I do feel like they are a very valid choice depending on the type of list that you're building. But yeah. I think that when you start looking at Reichsguard Knights, I would really start looking at them saying, like, right, I want a unit of 15 or I want a unit of 18. You know what I mean? Like 6x3. I want to put just this massive block on the board that's going to take somebody forever to chew through. And then in that situation, I would make sure to take a wizard with Lore of Light. Right. Lore of Life. And... Okay. Re-raise into that unit constantly, right? Because that's the unit that if you're re-raising into it, oh God, those points are coming back so good. Whereas Lore of Life is not necessarily going to be re-raising a ton back into your griff since they are multi-wound.
Right.
Right? Well, so, you know, I think like that would be a good way to go. But again, I'm building my army around Lore of Metal and Balthazar Gelt. So what I want to do is, you know, max out those armor saves, give the Demigryphons the plus one bonuses from, you know, the Enchanted Blades. And then use the doom spells to try to just do as much damage as I can before we really actually get into combat.
Right.
So how does this compare to your list? Or what would you? Or before we get into that, what do you don't like about what I'm doing here?
Is it
the multiple special characters?
There's nothing that I really don't like. I'm generally not a fan of taking special characters just because I like making my own guys, I suppose. It's kind of
You're better than me. That's right. No, you know what, Mang? I mean, I don't like taking special characters because I'm not a pussy. I'm not a pussy. Hey, you know what? I've got something that you can remember. It's a mnemonic thing. So here's the church. Here's the steeple. Open the doors and there's your big fucking vagina. Thanks, Matt. I appreciate
it. You're welcome. You're welcome, Mang. If you want, I can say it just plainly so everyone can understand.
Say it.
Just you. I think I'm forever going to be against taking level 4 wizards unless I'm playing vampire counts, just because I think magic is very unreliable, and I've seen so many tournament games where my opponent has taken a level 4 and that one crucial turn where he's like, man, I'm just going to raise back this whole unit of graveguard, two dice, oh shit, kind of, you know, it really, really sucks when those magic phases go wrong. Right.
Yeah. No, I hear you.
I personally would switch the swordsmen with the halberds, like 50 swordsmen and 25 halberds kind of thing. You'd have to switch some points around, obviously, because that would create a big points difference, I think. Yeah. But I don't know. It's just my personal preference. I like swordsmen. I can explain that if you'd like.
No. I know why you like swordsmen. I think the difference here is that if you look at the way my list is built, imagine the way that it's deploying, right? I've got two warrior priests, or I've got Luther Huss in the big unit of halberds, right? Mm-hmm. Maybe with a warrior priest in there as well, with a BSB. I've got an additional warrior priest in the unit of swordsmen, right? And then basically it's like with hatred and plus one to hit, I'm more worried about making sure my strength is up there as opposed to making sure I hit.
Wait, why do you have a second warrior priest in the swordsmen? They're a detachment, aren't they?
Can you not put warrior priests in detachments?
Oh, no, you can. It's just that they already are get all the buffs from Luther Huss being in the 50 halberds.
Oh, no, no. It's just more for making sure that, like, if they get into combat on their own, right, or if I ever need to have them leave that squad. Because if you look at the way that this is built, I really only have
one
two to three combat units, right? Whether you consider the 25 swordsmen a real combat unit or not, that's up to you. But, like, demigryphons, the swordsmen, and the halberds. So that's really all I've got for combat units, right? Three, which is pretty small for an Empire army.
I'd call a steam tank a combat unit. That thing's kind of a beast.
Well, see, I've been playing Lizardmen for a long enough time that I look at the steam tank the same way I look at a Stegodon, where I'm sitting there going like, yeah, it's a combat unit, but it's more support. I will rely on the blocks more than anything else. So in this situation, the reason why the additional warrior priest goes with the detachment of swordsmen is that they're a big enough unit that if I ever need to get them away and not use them kind of in that detachment situation where they're countercharging, I definitely want to have them make sure they've got maybe just a little bit more punch.
Right.
Right. Okay. So that's why I've got, and the hatred is great for them. So it's just like, yeah, I'll put an extra warrior priest in there. I feel like that's going to really help. I feel like that's just kind of the way to go. Warrior priests are cheap enough that you can get away with it.
Oh yeah, they're dirt cheap now. That's actually one of the huge benefits of this book.
Yeah,
that all these heroes are fairly dirt cheap.
Yeah, warrior priests went down like 30 points.
They were 90, I believe.
Yeah, they're 65 now, so 25 points. So, I mean, you know, definitely worth doing, to say the least. And again, like I said, I keep them without any gear. Like, they've got heavy armor and a great weapon or something like that. But they really don't, you know, like, I haven't crammed them in. But as far as I'm concerned, Luther Huss is great for the points. Balthazar Gelt is great for the points. I feel like unless you're playing in a tournament that bars special characters, they really are kind of clear choices. If you're trying to take a warrior priest, yeah, take Luther Huss. If you're trying to take a wizard, take Balthazar Gelt.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of the choices, I mean, when I read off my list here, a lot of the choices I took, you know, I didn't take Luther Huss because, like I said, I just kind of have a thing against
you're better than
characters.
Me. Just get it out.
Exactly.
Just get
okay, yeah, because I'm better than you.
Right.
I will just say this. I'm of the philosophy that almost anything in any book can be used to some effect and used well, but I'm looking at the page right now, and I just cannot see myself ever taking Marcus Wolfhard, even if I somehow decided I wanted to take special character. Holy crap, is this guy awful for his points. I get to reroll to hit monsters, guy.
If you're Matt Damon and you just love Huntsman inexplicably, then he's the greatest character in the world. But yeah, I agree. He's just such a weird special character. I think most of them are really weird special characters, you know, like even Karl Franz is one of those things where you kind of look at him and go like, he's a lot of points for essentially just a fucking elector count on a griffin. Like he really doesn't do much more than just buying an elector count on a griffin. Like you would actually expect him to have a lot more special rules and kind of more game changing rules than he really does. Like, oh yeah, he's got a rune fang and Galmaraz. You can only use one per turn, dude.
Well, come on. You gotta respect the 24-inch leadership bubble. That is just awesome.
But really, it doesn't mean anything.
It's awesome, though. That's the point. Everyone can hear his voice because he's so big.
You know, but he's already on a mount, so he would have got 18 to begin with. And if you've ever played with an 18-inch leadership bubble, it's virtually everything on the table. Just for the fact where they're just like, yeah, everything on the table gets it. But I'm just going to fucking kill him first turn. Like, it's... You know, he's still a fucking elector count on a griffin, for fuck's sake. Like, he's still easy enough to kill. All right, so what did you build? Let's go through your list.
Okay, so for my – I was going to say HQ. Lord, I've got 40K on the mind. For my local choice here, I just have a simple general with a basic gray weapon and 100 points worth of special gear, mm-hmm. A Captain BSB, two warrior priests both on foot with – like very, one of them has a 15-point magic item. The other one has a 5-point magic item. They're very cheap. I have an engineer, with light armor because I had the points, and the Ruby Ring, Battle Wizard, just level 2 straight up, pretty much a scroll caddy. And then for the real chunk, the real core of my army here, I got 60 swordsmen lined up with a detachment of 30 halberds and 10 handgunners because I thought the 10 handgunners was sweet, and I bought the Forge World ones and I had to use them. and then a unit of 28 greatswords with a detachment of 14 halberds and 7 archers. That the archers are more for theme. I was actually discussing that the other day. I was going to make them hobbit archers and kind of make my allies.
Right on.
Then a unit of 21 flagellants, 2 great cannons, and a hellblaster. And that's what the list looks like so far.
Right on. All right. So, okay, what was the last three things?
2 great cannons, a hellblaster, and a unit of flagellants. 21 flagellants.
Okay, so you've gone more the road of just really heavy infantry, 2 cannons, hellblaster, so a little bit of artillery in there. I did want to try to fit a hellblaster in, but you've got no mobility in that list.
Oh, I disagree. Well, okay, I don't disagree, but you don't need mobility when you
You're fucking wrong, Lang. Okay, never mind. You're not wrong.
Okay, well, I'll just say this. Because I've got so many blocks, and I've got a lot of really thick, chunky blocks, and the ones that are attached to the greatswords, because they're stubborn, I can hold a lot more ground, and I don't need to be super maneuverable. Now, I do play Wood Elves, and it does kind of irk me that I'm using hordes, and that it feels very clunky the way the army works, right. But so far as I've found, it's just, I don't know, it's... I think the Empire have kind of turned into one of those beefsteak armies where you walk forward and you beat the living crap out of the guy across from you because he can't do it back, right?
And you don't feel like the Steam Tank or the Hurricanium or the Luminarch are really worth taking at the points?
Oh, no, absolutely. I'm not saying that. I actually think they're well worth their points, especially the Hurricanium. I think that thing's amazing. However, to be quite honest, I just don't like the way it looks, and I take pride in how my army looks. So,
oh, I'll be chopping bits off that thing if I ever do this army, to say the least. I will be chopping bits off of it, but you know, I definitely like the Hurricanium more than I like the Luminarch. I think the Luminarch idea where they're just like, magnifying glasses, your ants, everyone's ants. I'm just like, oh, for God's sakes. Like, you couldn't have done this better than just fucking magnifying glasses. But anyways.
Giant laser cannon. It just looks stupid.
You could have done it better. It was a dumb idea.
I just don't... I can't think of any conversions that I would want to use or... is to fit them into my army that would really benefit me more than what I think I've got right now. And I've never taken a steam tank, and I never will. It's because I'm a Warhammer hipster, and I don't like taking the things that other people think are good. I don't know. That's how it's... That's also why I don't have demigryphs, actually.
Then why don't you have Huntsmen?
You know what? I was trying to fit them in, but the best I could do was that unit of archers.
Why am I even talking to you if you're just like, yeah, I'll be competitive as long as I can retain my cool indie cred. I'm like Scott Pilgrim of Warhammer.
I'm going to put on my hipster glasses. You're not going to see it, but yeah.
Oh, Jesus. All right, but again, you're going really heavy with blocks. You've got a couple of good redirecting units if that's what you're using the archers for. You've got the flagellants, which is great for holding a flank. So your overall strategy with this army is to grind through to turn 6 and win out in the end with victory points.
I think a lot of people will eventually find that Empire armies nowadays can actually hit really hard. One of the huge advantages you have with an Empire army, if you're not taking a like big boom spells, is you have so many little bound spells that just go off with these really, really tiny numbers that will force your opponent to throw his dice out till eventually you get that one that you want. You just nuke it with 6 dice and they can't stop it. You know, okay, they scroll it this turn. Next turn it's coming, and that's when the pain begins. I'll say this about flagellants, though. I did find these things were amazing. Yes, they hurt themselves a little bit more than they used to, but holy balls, do they hit like a truck.
Well, they're still just as good as they were. Like I said, their purpose in the game hasn't changed.
They're
better. They're 2 points more expensive. Yes, they're still... Well, yeah, if you kill more of your guys, they're definitely better. The plus one toughness is a huge bonus.
It's not that. It's the weapon skill. They used to be weapon skill 2. Now they actually hit things.
Yeah.
Slash, things don't hit them back as hard.
They're not undead skeletons.
Exactly.
Yeah, fuck you. Okay, so you had you did have a couple warrior priests in your list, right?
Yep.
Right. So I think we can all agree that warrior priests are a no-brainer.
If you want to take them. I mean, again, I'm a big fan of theme and stuff. So if you want to go with the theme, just wizards.
Okay, we're talking about tournaments here. Competitive play,
this is,
Matt.
This is my competitive list. You want to go? I'll take you on right here, theoretically.
I instantly regret inviting you on the show.
That didn't take long.
That's not the Scotch talking.
New record.
Yeah, right on. Okay, so, but again, your list is not outside of the norm. It is actually a competitive list in the sense that you're going very heavy on infantry. You're playing the percentages kind of more than my list would be, right? Like, you're playing the percentages in the sense that you know that you can push through into turn four with the list that you're using, as opposed to you are trying to crush your way through and kind of keep your core alive, which is the way that my list plays, right? So your list is kind of geared a little bit more towards the I'm hoping we get to turn five and six tournament. And my list is maybe geared a little bit more towards the guy who doesn't realize that Warhammer takes 2.5 to 3 hours to play, and you've got an hour and a half to play a fucking game.
Okay, yeah, so super aggressive versus...
Right, you gotta... I think in a tournament, in a lot of cases, unless they... You look at the schedule and you can see they're giving you about 2 to 2.5 hours to play in a... Well, depending on the point size. I think at 2,000 points, 2 hours is acceptable. I think at 2,500, 2.5 to 3 hours is acceptable per game. But yeah, I feel like you definitely have to be aggressive in your list building, because you need to make up those points before that buzzer sounds. Because it's not about random game length. It's about how quick is your opponent and how quick are you. I've played games in tournaments where I'm losing and I know I'm going to lose this game, but I still have all my units on the table. They may only have 2 or 3 guys left in them, but I still get all my points for those because he doesn't get shit for them. So I know I can win the game, where all of a sudden the clock runs out. You know what I mean?
I think the big thing is that what you want to try and do in a lot of fantasy lists, regardless of this applies back even to 7th, is you want to mitigate the areas where you've put your points. You definitely don't want to put all your points in one basket. And when you give people, when you feed people units, you want to make sure that they're not getting too many points out of them. I mean, the most expensive thing I have is that Zordsman block, because it's so, so big. But it only gives out, 400 points.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, and after that, you're like, oh, I killed your warrior priest. Oh, have
well,
fun.
And I think that
there's
that
70
was,
points for you.
I think that that was a big reason why they balanced the points the way that they did in the book, was that people needed to be putting more points into their core units.
Yeah.
Empire was very lucky in the sense that they would come in always just under the wire, but still have massively effective blocks. And there weren't a lot of other armies that did that, right? Outside of, a couple others. But, for the most part, I see what you're kind of going with yours. Now, what lore were you using?
Death all the way.
Lore of Death.
Oh,
now,
yeah.
Why? Now, on your wizard, what was he geared up with?
Actually, Iron Curse icon and a scroll.
So you've got him bunkered.
Oh yeah, for sure. He's not
running. That's fucking insane. You're just that. See, to me, that's you throwing away 250 points. Like, that's
250?
All that is. 250.
He's 130.
Okay,
you
that's
he's
okay.
Cheap as shit. That's the point.
Because is he a level 3 or level 4?
Level 2.
Oh,
you're
okay. So you didn't even take a level 4.
Oh, hell no.
Oh, you're gonna get butt fucked in the magic phase.
Hey, Lang,
your list
Wood Elf
fails automatically.
No.
Don't tell me about Wood Elf magic.
No. My Wood Elves have 2 level 1 casters, and I still shut down every single person in Out of the Basement and Tournament of Champions. Oh, no, I didn't play Tournament of Champions.
Listen, man, like...
Brackets. I still shut down everyone.
It's not about shutting down the magic phase. It's just... I will chalk it up to saying you got lucky. Like, I know the game that you had against Nathan during Out of the Basement.
He made some long charges, we'll say that.
I will say that you were...
I outgamed his Bloodthirster. I will also say that, and I hope Nathan will also attest to that. I outgamed his Bloodthirster. I did.
Magic. We're talking about magic, Matt.
What magic?
Oh, Jesus Christ. I feel like you're making a huge mistake avoiding a level 4. I feel, and again, I've talked about this at length, and I really hope people take it to heart, and I hope people start using it. And I would really like to hear from people, actually, on a side note. I would like to hear from people who have kind of done that the way that I've been playing and maybe see how it works for them, which is the your wizard should also should always fly. Your wizard should always have a 4+ ward saver or something comparable. And you should essentially be buying him to stay alive throughout the game and keep points on the table for you, right? You know, use bubbles effectively and stay out of range. Because I can tell you in the last 6 games that I've played, that has been a game changer for me. Absolute game changer. Whether or not I'm using a slan or I'm using something else, the fact that I've got a level 4 on the table that's either geared for combat or geared for just getting the fuck away from everything and never losing those points has been massive. I've always walked away from the game with those extra points on the board as opposed to putting him in a bunker and having a dude just direct attacks against him. Because well, I know that if you and I were going to play and I got into combat with that unit he was bunkered in, your swordsman, I assume.
Right? Well, see, here's the thing. So basically when I play games, because of my experience with Wood Elves, I'm going to always go back to Wood Elves. I love that army, by the way. I've actually become really used to bouncing my heroes around in units where they need to be and avoiding those situations. I actually play my Empire very defensively, unless the army that I'm going up against is just going to sit back and do the same thing. Then I'll go straight at them. But I find in most cases I have enough time to jettison my wizard, and then you can take a few pot shots. By that time, usually my scroll's burned, and she's not useful anyways because I'm probably going to hit combat next turn, so the Iron Curse isn't going to matter. If you want to waste your cannonball on her, go ahead. I might 4+ lookout, sir. You never know, kind of thing. I think when you learn how to bounce your heroes around and move them appropriately, I think that you don't need that level 4. You don't need that guy holding points for you because your unit should be able to do it for you.
See, for me, I always build a unit into my armies. Doesn't matter who I'm playing, and Empire included. I always build a unit into my armies that can take out a solo hero, right? In my vampire counts, it's a unit of wolves. In my lizard men, it's my skinks and my salamanders. In my ogres, it's my noblars and it's my my unit of lead belchers, right? Like, it's every single army I play, I always have a situation where it's just like, oh yeah, if he pulls a wizard out of the unit, like, I'll just move into position and smoke that thing. The only way that I feel like as soon as a wizard is outside of a unit, he has to have a ward save and he has to be able to fly. Otherwise, you're just leaving points on the table for me to take from you. And even if it is just 130 points, you know, that's 130 points. Like, that will change my overall score enough that I can win a game out of that, right? Like, okay, we're not talking about a paltry 50 points or 25 points like it's a 10-man unit of nobblers. Like, this is... a lot of points.
I'll say this. Consider that when this hero is getting jettisoned from the unit, it's probably about turn 2 or 3, and she's usually dropping back behind the lines, not obviously out towards you. So you're gonna have to basically break through my bunker to get to that hero, unless you can shoot her. I mean, if you can,
Fly over you, shoot her, hit her with magic. Again, but, like, my slan has light of sight over the entire table, so I'll just hit you with magic, right? Like, it's.
But that's one spell I don't have to worry about. Because if you're going to target my hero with that, then, you know, if she doesn't matter at that point, which in all likelihood she doesn't, then...
But it's the points, right? Like, it's the points of it. Am I going to cast a spell that's like a 2d6 strength 4 magic missile on your unit of swordsmen and go like, yeah, I killed 4 more swordsmen? Or am I going to smoke a wizard and get 130 points for my end victory total?
But I think the big difference there is what you're casting at her and how important is she at that moment. A lot of times I find that when I'm doing that with my characters, I'll let people go ahead. If she dies, she dies. If she doesn't, that means it saved one of my units or basically made it easier for me to dispel the next of your spells. If that's the last spell you've thrown, well...
Well, you're not going to dispel shit if I fucking kill you. Well, okay. Agree to disagree that you're an idiot. So let's move on to... all right, so in your list, you obviously didn't take a steam tank because you're a hipster.
Yep.
You like the Hurricaneum, but you don't like the fact that it looks stupid.
Yep.
And you didn't take Demi Griffins because...
I'm a hipster.
You're a hipster as well.
Right.
All right, so...
I tried them. They were just way too face smashy. I just hate the I push this unit at you and you die kind of feel. So,
all right. So let's talk a little bit about playing against Empire lists. I don't feel like there's anything that we've forgotten at this point in terms of things that you should really, you know, look out for if you're trying to build an Empire list, because we're perfect. So obviously we would have talked about them if they were here. So I don't think anyone's going to feel the need to comment about this.
Absolutely not.
But let's talk about kind of playing against an Empire army here and the strategies that you're going to need to be aware of in terms of winning against this army by turn four, right? I think the big thing that's changed in this book, and I talked about it a little bit before, is target priority. You are going to have to focus your attacks in such a way that you're dealing with all of the kind of support elements in the list, the tertiary characters and things of that nature in the list, before you start dealing with the units. Before, when you were playing Empire, it was really easy to say, like, oh, you know, I'll just ignore the warrior priest, or I'll just ignore his Pope Mobile, or I'll just ignore the steam tank, and I'll really just kind of push my way through and not really worry so much about all this other stuff. It's more advantageous for me to really kind of drill through his model count faster as opposed to removing his special abilities faster. But in the Empire book now, we're talking about an army that has 2 to 3 more special abilities per unit now because of the way this book works, because of the way the special abilities in this book work. So if somebody's taking Warrior Priest, which is a given, I mean, 9 times out of 10, this is a given. Mm-hmm. When you get into combat, you need to remember that all of your attacks that can be directed against the Warrior Priest need to be directed against that Warrior Priest. They need to be killed. You need to look at that thing the same way that you would look at a BSB, right? It needs to die first. You can't let that BSB stay on the table. As soon as you're in combat with it, all of your attacks need to be directed against it, or you need to be declaring challenges and shit. Would you agree?
Yeah, I was actually going to say Empire. It kind of feels like Demons in that way, where you must kill the Herald, because if you don't kill the Herald, the whole unit will murder you.
Yes.
Kind of thing. And once that Herald is gone, then see you sailing from there.
Well, you're usually able to catch up a lot easier once the Herald is dead, right?
Like, exactly.
It's in the long run, it's more advantageous for you to do this. And because you're going to be outnumbering the majority of armies that you play against, you know that you can stay steadfast and you can work your way through all of those battles. So really, taking out those characters is really, really important. Magic, artillery, and support units are very important for dealing with the Empire support units. Dealing with the Hurricaneum, the Luminarch, dealing with... what's the other one that adjusts stats? The Pope Mobile.
Well, I think it just gives you hatred, doesn't it?
Well, yeah, but it's a bubble hatred, right?
I guess, yeah.
So, you know, like if the fucking Griffins are there, because you can't put any characters on a demigriff, right?
You can still put them on a horse. Okay.
I guess you could.
So, okay, think of it this way, okay? You're taking a unit of 4 demigriffs. You give them, I don't know, fucking just a warrior priest on a horse or Luther House. I don't care. Actually, it's probably better with a regular warrior priest on a horse. You give them a charm shield. If you give them the seal standard, which basically removes their barding, they're going to be in combat turn 2. The only round that they're going to get to try and shoot that warrior priest with a cannonball or a stone thrower, he's going to bounce it, and then he's going to be in combat, and it's not going to matter anymore. And then he's giving those demigriffs his hatred, and he's giving them his like magic spell bullshit. I don't know, if you want to give him flaming, go ahead.
I'd rather take a pump mobile.
Really?
Yeah, because the warrior priest is still easier to kill in combat. Like, if you go throw a demigriffs with a warrior priest into combat with me, I'll kill that warrior priest as soon as I can.
Maybe, but the same thing that's going to kill him on the way in is going to just decimate the Pope Mobile on its way up. Because it can't move as fast. It just can't, right? It can't march.
Well, yeah, I get that it can't march, but again, you're still only dealing... You're only really worrying about artillery, and artillery is always going to be a problem no matter what you do, right? Like, it's just... The level of gamble behind it in terms of this might die is the same no matter what you do.
I won't argue on that point, but
Because I'm fucking right.
I've never been a fan of big monsters in the first place, except for tree men, because they're just god machines.
Well, because you also play wood elves. No.
Wood elves are awesome.
Don't get me wrong. Play. I agree with you. I think, yeah, putting a warrior priest on a barded steed is a good way to go if you're going to attach him to a unit of demigryphs. Like, yeah, that's great. When I played Scott's Empire list after the podcast, he did beat me. It was some fucked up dice on my part, but he definitely played a very smart game. He had a Popemobile at the back of his board. It was providing hatred in all of the right places. It was giving it to his units of great swords. It was giving it to his
it's just giving it
everywhere. And I feel like that's kind of a great choice as opposed to, say, trying to slap a warrior priest into every unit. You know what I mean? Just because, again, if you keep that thing behind units the whole time, you're not worrying that much about anything other than artillery and the odd bits of magic, right? And you're getting the channeling and you're getting all the extra bonuses. Like, I feel like it is a smart way to go. But anyways, okay, so let's kind of push on from there. So you agree, right? We got to take out the support elements.
It's, all right,
so
really,
how do you play? How would you play against Empire, and not a cheesy, fluffy hipster Empire army, but like an actual competitive Empire army?
Well, I'd start by not being a douchebag. Like if I was Lang, I would definitely stop doing that.
I don't think Lang can do that. I'm just gonna tell you,
Lang can always end things.
I may have an inside source on this, but I doubt that's possible.
I was gonna say it's really hard to say, because it really depends how your army is built and what's a threat to you at what moment, how he's moving, this and that. Taking all that out though, I would have to agree, probably, yeah, killing a support element, killing out the heroes is probably the most important part. Because when you really think about it, without the heroes, swordsmen and halberds are actually really overpriced. So I'd say that's probably your best bet.
Okay. So, all right, let's break this down. For my list, obviously, trying to kill Balthazar Gelt as soon as possible is a huge number of points that you get to add to your victory total. So I would definitely tell people, you know, get right in there, go right after Balthazar Gelt. At that point, you really are going to be struggling against the list that I've built in terms of either targeting the BSB, targeting the Warrior Priests, or going after the Hurricaneum. The Hurricaneum is kind of a big thing here. It does add a huge bonus to the list. I feel like ignoring that is just a massive, massive mistake. It's not something that you can get away with. And again, its bound spell is a great thing to just make people throw dice away, because they can't afford to. Yeah, it only happens if I roll a 3, but people can't afford to have one of their units randomly turned in a random direction. Like, it's such a game changer that they will always throw dice away to dispel it. And I feel like that's a great thing to have, to kind of open every magic phase with that on a dice.
I would like to say something about that.
Okay.
I think it's a really nice tool, but I don't think it's a game breaking one. Just to, like, for example, you know, if you're playing my Empire Army with yours, because we'll take Wood Elves out of it, because Wood Elves are kind of an anomaly in this. You turn my great swords around. Say they turn right around. They're, you know, 100% backwards. I have a musician. I turn around next turn, and it doesn't matter if you charge me or I charge you. What's one combat res going to make? You know, what kind of difference is that going to make?
Well, it depends, right? Like, it's not a game changer in the sense that, like, oh, all of a sudden this unit is now worthless. But say I charge your great swords, right? And you've got a unit that's in prime position to countercharge me next turn. And I go cast this spell on them, and there's a chance that they may not be in a position to countercharge next turn, which means that I'm going to rape your great swords in the next round of combat. Is that now worth something to you?
Again, it would really have to depend on the situation. Maybe the great swords weren't the best thing to use, because, I mean, unless you're going to kill all of them, they're probably going to stick around. Let's be honest, they're great swords. They're stubborn. They're good at that. Well, mine aren't, but, you know, they're generally good at that. I don't know. I mean, it's
all right,
really
no,
hard
fair,
to say.
Fair enough. Fair enough. Again, I'm not trying to convince you. I'm just saying, like,
no, you make a good point.
This is the worth of the Empire Army in my eyes now, is all of these support choices. I feel like the Empire Army hasn't changed. Its effectiveness hasn't changed. but all of these support elements change its effectiveness and make it so much more than what it is currently. But with all of these support elements removed, they're just Empire like they were before, and you deal with them just like you were able to deal with Empire in the past, right? Chaos Warrior rips through them, yada, 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 right? It's the idea that all of these things now supplement them to the point that one unit is going to have four or five special rules, and until you actually remove all of those additional rules, they are really, really hard to deal with, and they're doing so much more damage than they used to be able to do, right? When we start stacking these abilities, right? Okay, now they're steadfast. Now they have hatred. Now they have plus one to hit. Now they've got, you know, flaming attacks from the banner. Now they've got rerolls. Now they've got rerolls to leadership is what I mean, right? Like, as soon as you start stacking all of those things up, it's like that unit is so elite. Like, it's essentially like it's a rare choice. It's so good at what it does. Yeah, you're still going to kill 10 swordsmen a turn. That's not going to change, but I'm going to kill three times as many guys as I have before. And that's what's going to change the game. So if you're not taking out those support elements early in the game, you're going to be kicking yourself later in the game. And again, I dealt with that firsthand when I was playing with my lizardmen. You know what I mean? So, you know, outside of that, you're always going to have the same target priority as you did before. Kind of, you're always going to want to try to deal with artillery with your fast-moving flanking support elements. Depending on which army you are, you're going to want to get into that artillery into turn two, because again, it's free points. It's 120 points, right? If you can take two cannons off the board, that's a pretty decent chunk of points to helping you win that game.
Yeah, I think to kind of just break it down, basically what you're saying, and what I do agree with, is what the Empire Army is really good at right now is threat saturation.
Yeah.
They have a lot of things that are a big threat, and I think to really play against them and to really excel at playing at, you know, defeating this new army, people are going to have to learn how to move and how to accommodate for such threats. When those demigryphons are punching hard down your right flank, you know, you're going to have to ease up on the left, punch harder back on the right, and try and recover that flank before you lose it and it crumbles. A lot of people, I've noticed, just don't have that ability. Like, they're so set in their castle, move forward, I do this kind of thing, that when something goes wrong, it just all falls apart and they blame the dice. Because, yeah, right. You did get one bad dice roll on that flank. But because you didn't accommodate and because you didn't adapt, that's why you lost. Not because you rolled bad in that one combat.
Well, and I think that everybody who's building a competitive list right now is building around the idea of detachments. I think everyone can kind of agree that detachments are a great choice. You know, it's just the idea of being able to countercharge, the idea of being able to keep your core big horde, like kind of that center of your army, protected as much as possible. I haven't really seen anybody building lists where they just say, like, fuck detachments, they're worthless, nobody needs to use them, like, just play Warhammer like every other army on the table and you're going to work out better. I feel like everyone can kind of agree that detachments are a bonus, and the way that you are able to use them is definitely worthwhile. Would you agree?
I think detachments have always been good. I use them in 7th and I use them...
Oh yeah, I agree.
Into 8th with the same list, and people just... like, because no one took them anymore in 8th, they were like, what, those things automatically flank? That's total bullshit! These armies are broken! You know, as opposed to playing the Empire list where they would walk into a halberd unit and then grind it to death because that's how people decided they should play. I think that people just need to start thinking outside the box and start, you know... I hate to rag on internet lists because, I mean, what the hell are we doing here? Right? We're creating internet lists.
Fuck that. This is a podcast list. We are not posting it. It's not all that accurate, as you can tell. This is kind of more theoretical than anything else. We are promoting that people do kind of take the time to build their own lists. And, you know, kind of the idea behind this is for people who are looking at it going, well, what would you do? Like, you know, like if you're sitting in a games workshop or you're sitting at your local gaming club and somebody says, like, hey, I'm thinking of building an Empire army, here's what I want to take. You know, you're not saying to them, like, nope, give me a printed list. Army builder only. I want to know exactly which magic items you're taking. It's kind of more about the idea of just like, okay, well, what's your plan? Like, what's your theme? Where are you going with this? You know, like, yeah, here's how I think that could work. Here's how you could deploy it effectively. You know, there's not a lot to talk about in terms of deployment with Empire. Would you say that? I mean, it hasn't changed much since the last book.
the major problem with Empire, and it will always be a problem with Empire so long as they have detachments, especially in this format where you have such big, expensive units, is that you're going to have to be careful with your deployment, but you can't really deploy in response to somebody, because in even the army that, you know, I just read off with tons of troops, I still only have, like, what, 5 drops? Because artillery all go down together, the flagellants go down together, and then I have two actual units, because they're all detachments, and then heroes.
Yeah.
Like, that's it. I you can't respond, so you kind of have to play defensive and play that castle and try and hold the line is kind of, you know, the theme of this book, I think.
Right, right. Well, and because you really don't have a lot of sideline support units, that's really the way that you have to play your list. I mean, in my list, I would say, you know, like, I have enough drops that I'm in perfect shape to really kind of adjust to the way that my opponent's playing, you know? Like, I can save the middle of the board and adjust the way that my big regiments are sitting, depending on how they play, by just like, oh, I know my steam tank's going to do good here. I know my demigryphons are going to do good here. I know my cannons are going to do good here, you know, and then say like, okay, now I'm going to drop my big stuff, you know, and then now I'm going to drop my heroes. Because again, I've got 6 heroes in my list, right? 2 special characters even. But I guess for me, like I said, you're still going to want to build your army around that big core, right?
Yeah.
Whereas opposed to high elves, you don't necessarily want to deploy that way. When you're deploying against Empire, you don't necessarily want to deploy that way. You want to make him move that big core unit awkwardly as much as possible, right? Like, you want him to either go after a small unit that's worthless and you're totally happy at the fact that he's putting that big unit into them and they're going to overrun and not do anything for the rest of the game, or you're going to make him turn and run towards you for the rest of the game. Like, yeah. It's really important to make sure that you keep those units out of combat as long as possible. That's another big thing for playing against Empire. That one big core unit in the middle of the table, don't go toe-to-toe with it. Just avoid it as long as you can. Or put something in front of it that you know he's going to go after just because he wants the free victory points. And then that's essentially keeping him out of the game as long as possible. And then so by the time you actually do get into combat with him, you're outnumbering him, you're hitting on flanks, he's out of position, you know, his general might be dead at that point. And that's very, very helpful when you're playing against Empire.
I think just, you know, one bit of advice I could offer to anyone who's listening to this for, you know, for advice would be, take your time in fantasy. You don't feel like you have to run across the table and beat him up as fast as possible. Because a lot of times when you take your time, you see those moves open up and you can see kind of, you know, well, if I pull these guys back here and manipulate these guys to the side, he's going to have to back up, change form this way. And in that moment, when he's paying attention to that side of the board, I'm going to nail this side of the board and just, you know, sweep him from the rear kind of thing.
Yeah, and I mean, I agree with that there. I think that that's totally fine. I would only say that in a tournament setting, you do have to play more aggressive. So I'll say that the exact opposite of what Matt just said, which is, you know, in a tournament setting, you do kind of have to plan for the idea that by turn 4, the game is going to end. So you do need to try to rack up victory points in a sense that you know that your core is not going to be wiped out by that point in the game. You know that you're still going to have your steam tank on the table, which means you're getting those points. And you're kind of playing the points denial game, but you have to try to grab points as much as possible, right? Yeah. I think in a normal game, if you're playing it in the basement and you know you're going to be able to round that out to turn 6, absolutely. Take your time, play smart, really work your way through and kind of look at the long game. But I think in a tournament, when you're looking at 2 hours with deployments and everything, you do have to kind of aim for playing a 4-turn game. And aim for making sure that you can get those points in 4 turns. But even still, that strategy doesn't change a lot. You know, the way that you deploy doesn't change a lot. And the type of units that you're taking in the army doesn't change a lot. So I think between you and I, we
covered
each,
every base.
Well, we each took a BSB. We each took a warrior priest. We each took cannons. And we each took an elector count. I think those 4 things are kind of the no-brainers. They're very important in your list. You want the leadership. You want the artillery. You want the warrior priest for hatred. It's just it's kind of the crux of the army now as it stands. So I feel like if you're building a list outside of that, like I know a lot of people are looking at building all cavalry lists now for Empire. Like I know that there's been a couple lists popped up on the internet of people saying like, hey, here's what I would do if I was building an all cavalry list using the new rule book. Even in those lists, still got an Elector Count, still got a BSB, still got Warrior Priests, and they still have the, what was the other one? Cannons. And they still have cannons, right? Like, those are the ones that are going to kind of be the same all across the list. They're just, they're too important to ignore, and they're too good to ignore.
Yeah. I will just say this, kind of going back to your list, actually, now that I'm looking back down at it. I think we got a little off topic, or just kind of...
No.
When we were
since
talking,
when? So when we were... I was watching a porn recently. No, I'm just kidding.
Oh, which one? Which one? So with the 50 halberds and the 25 swordsmen, I was gonna say the reason why I would switch that around is because I still believe strongly in the sixth ed, seventh ed idea of hammer and anvil. I find that swordsmen are a much better anvil. I mean, they've got a better save. You can't really argue that. They have a better weapon skill, so they just don't get hit as often, which is nice. And then the halberds actually come into the flank, and that's where they really do their damage, because that's where your enemy doesn't get their parry. That's where they don't get fewer attacks back. So your unit's taking less casualties, but dealing out just as much damage, right?
See, I'd be interested in math hammering that out, because I kind of see it the other way around. The swordsmen in the flank are doing the job of... hold on. God damn it.
That was attractive.
A nonstop professional podcast right here. The swordsmen in the flank are kind of doing what they need to do, which is disrupting steadfast and disrupting ranks. That's really all I need them to do.
The halberds will do the same thing.
Well, no. I'm not saying that that's the case, right? I'm not disagreeing with you there. But when I put somebody into the flank, if I lose a couple of guys, I need to make sure that that doesn't suddenly mean that he's not losing steadfast and his ranks, right? Like, I need them to stay alive. And the unit in the front, which they may be dumping all of their attacks into, you know, whether they're swordsmen or they're halberds, I'm probably going to lose the same number of guys. I mean, most of the time, I might lose one or two less swordsmen. But if I'm not doing enough damage back to him, and it's pretty much a guarantee that halberds will do, I mean, if we're talking with a warrior priest, with a hurricanium, halberdiers will probably do maybe 30% more wounds back than swordsmen will. If I'm, and again, I'm just guessing, I haven't math hammered it. So it's the idea that, like, I'm disrupting ranks, but I'm also doing enough wounds that disrupting ranks means something, right? If I lose combat, me disrupting his ranks or him not having steadfast doesn't necessarily mean anything, right? It's more the idea of making sure that me, I win by a lot, and I'm disrupting, and he loses his steadfast, so that I'm breaking him and I'm pushing through him. You know what I mean? So for me, that's kind of where I see it. Not surprisingly, we don't see eye to eye. I guess I'm just not a Warhammer hipster.
We're all really good at this game, and we all make the exact same list because the internet is where you get your list from, right?
Well, yeah, 9 times out of 10, right? Oh, good God. Well, Matt, let's talk a little bit about the tournament that you are running with Team OP, which is going to be in June. So give us the details for anybody who wasn't listening to the last time you were on.
It is June 2nd and 3rd. It is at the Glamorgan Community Center over here in Calgary. We only have, that I can see on my list right now, we have one spot open left in Fantasy, and a two and a theoretical third spot left open in 40K. We got a kind of a guy who's sitting there to be a ringer.
Theoretical third, ooh.
Yeah, a theoretical third. It's the best kind of third. It's 1,600 points 40K with a percentage system. So there's a 25% minimum troop thing, and then like a 1 HQ slash 25%, up to 25% HQ thing. It's all on the site teamoponline.com. The player's pack's on there. You get all this stuff. And Fantasy is $22.50. We're basically playing kind of a standard tournament style with 15 maximum possible points for a massacre, with an additional 5 points, bonus points. Sorry, from special objectives that you kind of get to choose at the beginning of the game that your opponent has, you know, they don't know what you're doing. So they can range from anywhere from, like, kill your enemy's HQ with one of your HQs to, I don't know, like, have more objectives than your opponent by the end of the game kind of thing.
All right.
Even if you have less guys on the table.
Gotcha. All right, sounds good. So, yeah, definitely check it out if you are interested in going and you just haven't bought your ticket yet. As you can see, they are very much at the end of the list right now. So if you want to go, send Matt an email or go to teamoponline.net.
.com.
Sorry.
Yeah, very good.
And get yourself in there. It is in June. And, well, thank you very much, Matt, for coming on the show.
Thank you for having me, Len.
You had an interesting perspective.
Is that how we're going to put it?
Well, I mean, I like to joke, but it's not like Nathan and I always agree eye to eye on this kind of stuff. I was going to say, I know Nathan has a very different list build than I have. And I was even going to bring up the idea that, like, I don't think even between you, me, and Nathan, any of us have taken Spearmen. Even though they're cheaper than Halberds now, they're still not the choice.
Oh, no. I just don't like the models either. Honestly, they break too easily. But tell you what, Lang.
But you're a hipster. You should take them because you're a hipster. You should be like, I liked Spearmen back when they were cool.
But I didn't like Spearmen back when they were cool. So
oh, God. Matter. You're one of those retroactive hipsters.
So I'll tell you what, Lang. Are you going to Out of the Basement this year?
I believe I am. When is
it? Tell you what. I actually don't know. Apparently they were down here in Calgary sneaking behind my back and not handing us tickets because I think they're afraid of us.
No, I like the Out of the Basement. I have a lot of fun at the tournaments when we go. Yeah. Like, it's to say the least. I was very drunk at the last one. No. I do want to go. I'm going to be in Arizona throughout June, so I know a lot of, like, your tournament and Cooley Carnage are both in the realm of, like, no, I'm out of town at the time. Yeah. But, like, I'm playing in Warhammered. I was going to be playing in Nonstop, but I'm actually going to be going to the Calgary Comic Expo with some family. So I'm going to be mixed around there, and I know Nathan was going to play an Onslaught, but he may be changing his schedule depending on some other stuff that's going to be happening with the show here. So it's there's a lot of stuff kind of in flux right now, but I try to get to as many tournaments as possible. So if I don't have anything else going on, I'm always like, yeah, let me get in on that. And I've played in the last two Out of the Basement, so I don't see why I wouldn't play in the next one.
Well, I'll tell you what, then. If I actually play you in Warhammer or Out of the Basement, we'll settle this like man nerds, all right?
Yeah, well, you'd have to win for that to happen first. That's my GamerCast for this week. My name is Lang.
I'm Matt.
Have a good one.